listening to Independence West on VOA.
This is going to be a show, the type of which I've been looking to do for a while, because I have been thinking about the first topic of today's program, the Indian general election, for a long time. Just the sheer complexity of the exercise makes it something very, very interesting. So here you have the world's largest democracy, you know, in terms of actual number of voting people, electing its parliament, the lower house of parliament, the Lok Sabha, over a month. In a minute, we're going to talk about it with Aru Pandey, who's just returning from New Delhi, where she was VOA bureau chief, Indian-American, has a long career in journalism, and again was recently covering South Asia for the Voice of America. In the studio, we got a regular Arash Rabasadi. Hello. Again, the man who is so cool, he actually brings his fiancée to the studio, where she's looking on, you know, in great awe and great loving eyes and all that. Have I embarrassed you enough? Okay, beautiful. I'm getting a thumbs up. I've done my job. I'm happy. We got Wagner Roberts in the engineering booth, Rohit Kulkarni with us, and Laura Wojcik, our intern, who, it has to be said, just got the news today she was accepted into a master's in journalism program in France.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Aru Pandey, thank you very much for being with us. Tell us how this whole thing runs. How does India actually go about electing its parliament?
Well, obviously, like you said, it's a very long, complex process, and it started this week. 9 different election days over 5 weeks, and more than 900,000 polls, and more than 800 million registered voters. And it is it's a long process. It's a complex process, but it's one that has to take place like this because of the sheer numbers, and because you have to ensure the security of everyone voting. And so far, it seems to run okay. I mean, when you look at other countries, there haven't been any huge, massive problems coming out of it, which is a bit surprising. But yeah, it's a huge endeavor.
Now, Rohit, could it be that different states vote on different days? Is that how it runs? Because you hear those stories, for example, on a completely different, you know, level and topic about how, for example, in Lagos, cars that have certain tags may only run, you know, on some days, and other cars on other days, that sort of things.
Well, this time it's longer than usual. You know, it started on the 7th of April. It's going to run until 12th of May.
Yeah.
And as Aru mentioned, you know, almost 14 million voters, almost 150 million new voters this time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of youngsters going to vote for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's complex. I mean, 930,000 voting booths. And I must emphasize on the fact that it's all electronic, you know, regardless of how small or how big the voting area is. So in those terms, I have never seen anything like this. I mean, I've the last time I voted was maybe around 15 years ago or maybe 16, 17 years ago. And things have changed drastically. And this time's election is all about big data, you know.
Mm. Now, you're talking about young voters, and again, big data, you know, capturing the youth vote and all that sort of things. Could it be one of the reasons the governing Congress party is running Rahul Gandhi, you know, the grandson of Indira Gandhi, as its candidate? Because the guy is relatively young, you know, his mid-40s and so. And he is running to replace Manmohan Singh, who's a retiring prime minister.
Well, actually, he's not. It was perceived that he was going to be the prime ministerial candidate, but I believe that Congress knows that they're likely not going to win the most seats.
Well, things are pretty bad. They could lose this election
badly. And it's going to be huge. And I think they know that. I think Sonia Gandhi, who's the head of the Congress party, knows that. And she doesn't want to put her son's name out there as a prime ministerial candidate because, obviously, if the Congress comes back in the future, she wants to make sure her son can run as prime minister. So I think it was very calculated. It was a conscious decision not to name a candidate for prime minister.
Wow.
So they're
but
just
he is running,
running
in the election, right?
No, yes. He's just the head of the campaign.
I see.
But
I see.
I mean,
no,
he's
going to run from
his own constituency.
Called a
lawmaker.
For parliament, okay.
Right,
yeah.
As parliament.
Yeah. But he's not going to be considered prime ministerial candidate.
Well, we don't know that. But he's not been named now, is what we're
saying. I see.
The opposition BJP, you know, has already come out and said, Modi's our man.
If we win
the most seats, he is going to be, you know, the one who's going to be heading up this coalition as prime minister. So
Rahul Gandhi is, you know, perceived as a scion of the Gandhi family, the biggest dynasty in Indian politics.
Yeah.
He has been a parliamentarian on 2 occasions.
Yeah.
And a lot of people before the election campaign started thought that his name will be announced as the formal prime ministerial candidate for the Congress party. But things haven't gone in their way, and they decided not to put up any name.
And again, it's possible they're not just going to lose, but lose this election badly.
Well, I saw it last year in New Delhi when they just had the local government election.
Yeah.
The Congress Party, which was in charge, was taken out of power after several years.
Mm-hmm.
And the BJP, and even the BJP, the main opposition party, didn't win, you know, it didn't win an outright, I mean, it won the most votes. But there's a third party out there, the Aam Aadmi Party, the Common Man Party,
mm-hmm.
which basically took, I think, 28 seats out of, I don't know how many, 60 total.
Yeah,
it was a huge number.
BJP just had 2 seats more than the Aam Aadmi
Party.
Yeah,
and this Aam Aadmi Party just was formed in 2012, I believe.
Yes.
And it was formed on this whole anti-corruption stance platform. And it was mind-boggling, the fact that this party that emerged 2 years ago could literally take that many seats. So the point is, a lot of things are shaking up, and I think what you see is that there's just a huge unhappiness with the current state of affairs in India. I mean,
absolutely.
That's basically what you see.
Slow growth, corruption.
Absolutely. And the people there are saying, look, we had double-digit growth some, you know, over a decade ago or in the last decade, and now we're down to less than 5%. We haven't seen any of this so-called money and investment come down to us. And I think that's what it is. People are tired of corruption. They're tired of high inflation. They're tired of having to, you know, see high prices when they go to the market.
And national security.
Yeah. They want to change. The Congress Party has been in office for 10 years, and they said, you know, that's enough.
You talked about slow growth. Can you explain what caused this slow growth recently, and that was not the case before? What changed since double-digit period?
I think the way the Congress Party and maybe Rohit can, I think they're being blamed for not really enacting policy that is business friendly. I think that's part of it. A lot of people are discouraged. I think a lot of other countries feel discouraged from investing in India. They don't feel like it's business friendly. And I think that's part of it. They're not really
Which is interesting because Manmohan Singh had a reputation as a business friendly
guy. He's an economist.
At least as business,
yeah.
Exactly. As business friendly as you could get in the Congress Party.
Right.
He was finance minister in the late 80s and early 90s.
Well, his policies were largely responsible for opening up the markets and India's growth. But at the same time, if you look at last 5 years, you'll see that there were many, many corruption scandals.
Huge.
I mean, there were so many corruption scandals that you can even never imagine, you know. And the whole 5 years, it was more about the corruptions than about the growth. There was a lot of bureaucracy and red tapism.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yep.
You know,
mm-hmm.
foreign investors were not really happy to invest in India during this time.
Now, if, in fact, BJP, Bharatiya Janata Party, wins, Narendra Modi, its leader, will presumably become prime minister. I've often heard it described as a Hindu nationalist party. What does that mean specifically? Does it mean, for example, that, you know, you enact a certain set of cultural policies? Does it mean, you put a moratorium on building mosques? What does it mean? People who say it's a Hindu nationalist party never explain precisely how they define that.
Well, I think it's because it's kind of moved away from that. I don't know.
I
don't see it as a Hindu nationalist, though I think a lot of media outlets still couch it as that.
Just to go back in briefly in history, you know, BJP has this really strong part called the RSS, the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, which is a Hindu, it's a very strong Hindu, so Western media often calls it fundamentalist, part of the party that actually was the basis of the philosophy of the party. And this party actually historically believed that India, being a Hindu majority, should be preferring the Hindus. And that's where the whole Hindu nationalism came from. I don't think today's Bharatiya Janata Party is Hindu nationalist in that sense, because they have moved towards the center. They have quite a few Muslim leaders in the party.
Right.
One of their main spokesperson, Mukhtar Abbas Naqvi, is a Muslim. So in that sense, now today's BJP is more about economic growth,
mm-hmm.
and sort of the whole agenda is about growth rather than about religion or anything else.
And I don't. Yeah, and I think talking about the complexity of it, I don't think it's very difficult to say, okay, because a person's Muslim, they'll vote a certain way, or because a person's Hindu. I think we want to avoid that, because it's really a lot more complex than that.
Mm-hmm.
And like he said, it's kind of moved. I want to say moved away from that in terms of.
So one thing that I want to emphasize again is there are 1,300 registered political parties in India. All of them are contesting in the elections. 1,300.
Wow.
There is I mean, you can name and
more than there are seats in parliament.
Right. and neither of the two are likely to win an outright majority. Yeah. They won't. They'll have to form a coalition.
No, you always have coalitions
right.
anyway.
Right. So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of political
wrangling.
Dealing
and dealing
yeah, exactly.
and all that sort of
thing. So it's not, there are a lot of people who are not going to vote for either party. So
we're talking about the Indian general election campaign on Independence West on The Voice of America. We'll be back in a moment with Arup Pandey and Rohit Kulkarni.
L'hypocrisie dans la politique, ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Démagogie dans la politique, ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. La dictature dans la politique, ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Du bonheur, du bonheur. Ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Les magouilleurs dans la politique. Ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Les dictateurs dans la politique. Ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Du respect de guerre, impitoire pour ses ennemis. Il travaille pour lui, en disant qu'il travaille pour nous. Il nous dit merci, en passant, voilà qui est pris.
Ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon.
L'hypocrisie dans la politique, ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Démagogie dans la politique, ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Les dictateurs dans la politique, ce n'est pas bon, ce n'est pas bon, nous n'en voulons pas. Du respect, du respect.
Don't let them know. Well, now they know. It's funny how some distance makes everything seem small. And the fears that once controlled me can't get to me at all. It's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. No light, no role, no rules for me.
We're back on ID West. Arupande, they were talking a minute ago about the Indian middle class, and you said economic growth has slowed down drastically in the past few years, a big reason why the Congress Party may lose this election. Can we already discern a trend in the political preferences of the burgeoning middle class? Because, I mean, you can talk about slowing economic growth, but the fact is that the middle class, as far as I can tell, is still expanding. Can we discern a set of political preferences already? Where are their votes likely to go?
Okay, well, I can just talk based on my experience. Well, first of all, looking at the population of India, the majority of the population still is in the rural areas.
Yeah.
And historically, I think Rohit can talk about the fact that most of the people who historically go to the polls in India are rural, and they're poor. They're from
which
the lower.
Which is very interesting. What a contrast to the United States.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Poor people here vote a lot less.
Exactly. It's a less
you know,
educated
than middle class
yeah,
people.
Yeah, because well, who stands to benefit more? They're the ones that want to see the change. You know, the people who don't make
but
the money.
But it's fascinating.
But
one thing
here,
that I saw
nobody,
that
yeah.
one difference that I saw though when I was out and talking to people just on different issues, I would talk to people who are former executives, you know, industrialists who say, we're going to vote, and we're going to vote for BJP. And so I just saw a lot of, and even amongst the young people, and Rohit had mentioned that this is, you know, more than 100 million now new voters. India's youth population is, what, 65% is under 35.
Yeah. Wow.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, their priorities are going to be different. And they want to see change. They want to see their country prosper. And, you know, corruption hits everybody. It doesn't just hit the poor. I mean, the poor, it hits more than others. But, you know, they want to see an end to the red tape and everything.
And surprisingly enough, more often than not, it's the middle class that has stayed away from the voting booths.
Right.
You know, and this is the first time I believe that people are excited to go and vote because they're looking at a change.
You know? Now, you say stayed away from the voting booth. Why yeah. might that be? Because they didn't see a difference between who ran the country?
Exactly. I mean,
previously?
There was a general unhappiness and unenthusiasm about going and casting your vote because, oh, what's going to change
right.
in the country? That was the attitude.
All
of
the politicians are the same and
yeah.
it's the same status quo situation. And I think it also, I mean, it goes back to when you think it doesn't affect you, then you're not going to go. And if you're comfortable in your middle class life, and now if you see businesses and corporations and executives saying, look, we can't institute policy, we can't get investment, now they're seeing that, guess what, this is not helping us either. So I think that makes a difference.
I mean, and I want to talk about, you know, how social media has actually, you know, helped in building that excitement, because all parties in Congress, BJP, have used social media to excite their voters, and there are lots of jokes and slogans on WhatsApp and Facebook. It's just mind-boggling, and I think that has created sort of excitement for the youth to go and vote. You mm-hmm. know?
You're making it sound, the two of you, as though this may be the most important election in India. I don't know, maybe in the last 25 years. The reason I say that specifically, let me tell you why. Because I remember, and again, I was reading that in Western newspapers as someone living, you know, here in the West. The 89 election saw a leftist coalition
right.
take
mm-hmm.
over briefly.
Yeah.
You know, VP Singh, you know, yeah. leftist leader, yeah. who I think, by the way, was an accomplished poet in
right.
his spare time.
Yeah.
Is this really a watershed election?
I don't think you know that until you actually see who comes to power and you see if they actually do anything. You know what I'm
okay.
saying? There's a lot of hype around Modi and BJP, and he's going to do what he did for India, what he did in his home state of Gujarat, where he said to, you know, cut through the red tape and green light projects and get things done a lot faster. But I think it's, you know, you have to wait, and I think, I don't know, it's hard to...
It has a lot to do with Modi's personality
yeah.
and Western media's fascination with Modi.
Yes.
Also because of his background and what happened in Gujarat in 2002, the whole riots where more closer to 2,000 Muslims were killed, Hindus were killed, and Western media held him responsible. Whereas when he was interviewed, he showed no remorse, and he said that he didn't manage the media well. The Supreme Court of India gave him a clean sheet a few years ago. About his involvement in the riots. So there is this tremendous fascination towards Modi. America decided not to grant him visa back in the days. And now they have decided that if he becomes a prime minister, that he may get a diplomatic visa. He can visit the United States. So there is this fascination towards Modi and his personality. He claims to be a single person, although yesterday he in his documents he said that he was married 50 years ago. So he has no family. He's a very strong...
And that's what he claims, that because I have no family, you know, I have...
There is no motivation for corruption.
Exactly. Who's going to benefit if I become corrupt and collect all this money? So he, yeah. He has a very autocratic style of leadership.
Travel to the United States visa, good segue into foreign policy. Should BJP win this election, you know, come out at the top governing party, do you foresee much of a change in foreign policy? In relations with the United States, but also, of course, with Pakistan and Afghanistan?
Well, relations right now with the United States have not...
Yeah.
They've really plummeted. Yeah. We all know about the incident involving the Indian diplomat.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Yeah. And
oh,
the
yes.
ramifications and India's response in New Delhi. I saw it because the security barriers were taken away from
the U.S. Embassy.
I mean,
wow.
a number of, you know, the American Embassy School is being investigated. I mean, there's a number of repercussions. So relations as it is at an all-time low, and I don't considering the U.S.'s stance towards Modi in the past, it's going to be interesting to watch.
But I would still think that, you know, it would benefit the U.S. and India
exactly.
both, of course, you know, because the business ties
they
are so
can't
strong.
Afford, right.
No
they
one can't
afford
to mm-hmm. Go away from each other, you
yeah.
know, and it has taken us almost 50 years to come this close, and now, you know, so I don't see in terms of foreign policy towards the U.S. here, there will be some initial hiccups, but I think we will become strong allies again.
Because they have too much to lose.
As far as Pakistan is concerned, Modi has really strong words for Pakistan. He has mentioned it several times that the way the previous government handled the issue of terrorism, especially with the attack on Mumbai and all these things.
Yeah.
He mentioned that Pranab Mukherjee, then foreign minister, was writing love letters to Pakistan, and Pakistan was responding, and he was writing them back, and he said, this has to stop, and I'll make it stop, and things like that.
And the issue of Kashmir as well.
Yes. So yeah. he has a very strong stance against Pakistan. So
it'll be interesting to watch what happens there. But I think for the time being, the focus might be more on domestic. I think there's a lot to be done domestically.
I think current focus is, you know, this candidate is going to spend $5 billion. Whereas in U.S. they spend $7 billion, so you can imagine the magnitude of the
yes.
elections. As I said, the numbers
are really
huge. But
of course, spending $5 billion on a lot more voters.
Right,
exactly.
but still it's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah,
if you look
of course.
At, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But
a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking real money. So there you go. Anyway, Aru Pandey, thank you so very much for taking time to come and talk
thank
to us.
Having
I hope
me.
We have you again on the show. And it's been a pleasure. Definitely I'm going to follow this election campaign, the month of it or so, slightly less than the month that's still left, but
yeah.
You know, world's biggest democracy, certainly it's worth our attention. Anyway, you're listening on the Voice of America's Independence West. I'm Robert D.
Well, you can tell everybody, yeah, you can tell everybody.
go ahead and tell everybody I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Questions. I'll be the teacher, you could be the lesson. I'll be the preacher, you be the confession. I'll be the quick relief to all you stressing. It's a thin line between love and hate. Is you really real or is you really fake? I'm a soldier standing on my feet. No surrender and I won't retreat. Stand up now and face the sun. Hide my tail, I turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man.
Yeah.
Baseball is America's national pastime on Independence West on the Voice of America, and generally speaking, and we can't talk about baseball without having Dan Joseph, who's VOA News' Africa editor, baseball aficionado, Pittsburgh native, absolutely.
Right.
Actually, the two Pittsburghers, you know, Arash and Dan Joseph, are sitting in the corner, you know, fist bumping and all that sort of things. In any event, Dan, the baseball season is about, 2 weeks old?
Mm-hmm.
What to look for this year?
We have quite a few good stories developing. The New York Yankees. Now, this is their shortstop, Derek Jeter. This is his 20th and final year in the league. And so he's already getting a round of days and special.
Isn't he making an insane amount of money for this final year? I mean, they
not
kept.
Not compared to you, Robert. But
well, of course, that goes without saying. But they've kept on. They've kept on signing him, I think, to like 1 year contracts the last several years. And why is he getting? Isn't he getting something like $18 million a year, something like that?
But the Yankees can afford it. The Yankees, they.
But
they,
is it a kind of thank you for all you've done for us the last 20 years or so?
Oh, unquestionably, yeah. But you know what? They can afford it also because Alex Rodriguez, the three-time MVP, he has been suspended for the whole year for drug use, and so they don't have to pay A-Rod his $25 million this year. So $18 million to
Derek
Jeter.
So they've got cap space, salary space.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, who are the stars other than Jeter? Who is retiring, right? Who are the stars other than Jeter to watch this year?
Well, I don't know about retiring stars so much because Jeter definitely tops that list.
No, of course. But generally speaking, what are the big names in the game, generally speaking?
Well, the Detroit Tigers have Miguel Cabrera. He's the back-to-back winner of the MVP award the last couple of years. And he is trying to take the Detroit Tigers to a world championship. They've come close a couple times in recent years, haven't quite made it over the hump. It's a very interesting team. They've got two of the best pitchers in the game, Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, and they've got Cabrera. I'm not sure they have all that much else. You know, they've got some quality players, but no other stars. In the American League, they'll be trying to get past the Boston Red Sox, the defending world champions. They were just honored at the White House last week. I find it interesting that the Red Sox have this rookie shortstop. His name is Xander Bogaerts, and he's one of the few Major League Baseball players to emerge from Aruba.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, the Boston Red Sox are the defending World Series champions, and I, watched the World Series last year. Do you get the sense the Red Sox won because they really had bona fide superstars or because they were a well-coached team with truly good players that really knew how to put it together at the right time?
The second one, yeah.
Really?
I mean, they have stars. They have Dustin Pedroia, who's the second baseman.
Right? Second base.
They've got David Ortiz. They've had him for a number of years. Always a guy who comes through in the clutch. You know, not the greatest player in the game, but always seems to hit 30 to 35 home runs. Comes through in big moments.
Very
consistent, yeah. I think it's going to be either the Red Sox or the Tigers in the American League this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, the Yankees are at a whopping 5-5 at the moment.
Yes.
Changing of the guard, end of an era. End of an era for baseball generally because, hey, baseball without a dominant New York Yankees team is just not the same.
The Yankees are not going to win the pennant this year. They do not have the hitting especially. And actually, they don't even have the pitching. They're in some kind of transition, but,
he doesn't agree,
we'll see.
I'm still laughing thinking about the selfie gate that took place. Was that last week at the White House? He took a selfie with the president, and it turned out being
Ortiz.
Part of an ad campaign.
Yeah.
Nice.
The White House was not happy.
David Ortiz.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The world champion reception. Before we go to other teams, just one more question about the Red Sox. How much do you think the emotional impact of the Boston Marathon bombing how much do you think that played into their winning the World Series last year?
I think that gave them a boost. I mean, the Red Sox have been good now for a solid decade. They won championships in 2004, 2007. It wasn't a stunning development to see the Red Sox win the World Series, although they come back from, I think it was 2012, they had a bad year, or 11, I can't remember which one. It's always a well-run organization, and they're almost always in the pennant race. So it's not that stunning, but it probably did give them a boost. you know, the emotion coming from the city, you know, trying to win it for the city after the marathon.
Yeah. Now, we talked about, obviously, the Yankees. You think it's going to be the Tigers or the Red Sox in the American League. Let's go to the National League for a little bit. What are the teams to look for? Washington, Milwaukee, San Francisco, Pittsburgh, maybe?
Pittsburgh. They're off to a good start. I think they're 6-2 or 6-3.
One of those well-run organizations with no bona fide stars, or do they have absolute superstars?
No, that's got to be something new, right?
Yeah, that's a brand spanking new development. The Pirates are a well-run organization.
I'm saying that because they went from winning a couple of World Series titles, but that was in the 70s. And then I think there was a year in which they were so bad they didn't have a highlight film. You know, they didn't put out a highlight film. No, I'm not kidding. I think you're serious.
Right.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Probably a few years. Yeah.
So might have had a couple decades.
Right. Well, there you go.
It was awful.
But they're having a decent start to the season right now.
They're off to a good start, and actually they have shown. This is going to be even, I think, more so than last year. This is going to be a team to be reckoned with. Just yesterday, they were down 4-0. They came back to win 5-4. I think they have the reigning National League Most Valuable Player in Andrew McCutchen. They've got the reigning home run champion in Pedro Alvarez. They've got four good starting pitchers. And I think already I've seen, I almost get the feeling they're better this year than they were last year, based on what I've seen so far. But there are other good teams. The St. Louis Cardinals, the defending National League champions.
A traditionally well-run organization, of course.
They're very much like the Red Sox. They're always well-run. They're always in the hunt. Washington, you know, they have such – the Nationals have such great potential talents. They've never put it together. But they've got Steven Strasburg, the pitcher.
Of course.
He has such a huge upside. Bryce Harper, who's been a phenom ever since. They've seen him coming since he was 14 years old. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated around that time. Although he has this tendency to whack himself in the head, throw himself against a wall, you know, a little bit of a...
He's reckless.
Yes, a little bit of a reckless streak. But the Nationals, if those players did come through and Ryan Zimmerman and some of their other good players came through, they could be certainly a threat to win the National League East or go further. The Atlanta Braves are always good. The San Francisco Giants, they won the World Series in 2010
and 2012.
And they have most of those players still on the team. So I wouldn't say there's an obvious dominant team in baseball this year.
Let me ask you this. Do we live in an era of giants or in an era of truly good players spread across the league? The reason I'm saying that is that baseball takes great pride in its traditions, in the fact that it's the oldest and most, you know, at least it was the first really popular sport in the United States. You always hear about legends like Ruth, DiMaggio, people like that. Are we living in an era of giants or near giants, or are there just a lot of truly good players who can make an entertaining, you know, for an entertaining season, who can push a team over the hump, that sort of thing?
There are a lot of good players spread out among a lot of good teams, and that's a surprising development because as recently as 10, 12 years ago, people worried that free agency and the concentration of TV money in a few markets was going to lead to perpetual domination by the New York Yankees in particular, but also a few other teams such as the Red Sox. And there was a period where the Yankees won the World Series 4 times in 5 years. But really, it has spread out in the last decade, and there is no team any longer that you can call a perpetual doormat. All the teams tend to rise up at one time or another and at least make a run at a pennant, even the Pirates being the best example, but also the Kansas City Royals, who were downtrodden for a long time. The Baltimore Orioles were they had 13 losing seasons in a row. It's almost become something like the National Football League, where you have maybe not quite parity, but you have there's always a chance that any team could rise up and compete.
We're going to take a quick break on the Voice of America's Independence West. We'll be back in a moment to talk to Dan Joseph about the future of baseball and the prospects for baseball in coming years.
¶¶ Gentleman, you got it in clock, you got it and go for shoemaker.
Give me his road, oh yes.
Give me his road,
oh yes.
Give me his road,
oh yes.
I say, give me his road,
oh yes.
I say, give me his road,
oh yes.
I say, he me his road.
Oh, yes.
I say, he me his road.
Oh, yes.
Accused, when fighting lawyer, he giving case to prosecutor.
He me his road. Oh, yes.
He me his road.
Oh, yes.
He me his road.
Oh, yes.
I say, he me his road.
Oh, yes.
He go for prison.
Oh, yes.
He go for jail.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
Driver, where enter one way, he go jam magistrate for road.
He me his road. Oh yes,
he me his road.
Oh yes.
He me his road.
Oh yes.
I say he me his road.
Oh yes.
I say he me his road.
Oh yes.
He could pay you fine.
Oh yes.
He go for jail.
Oh yes.
I say he me his road.
Oh yes.
I say he me his road.
Oh yes.
Musician, where carrying band, he play for Union of Deaf and Dumb.
He me his road. Oh yes,
he me his road.
Oh yes,
he me his road.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
he go play for nothing.
Oh yes,
he go play for nothing.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
Gorilla, where run from bush? Enter Lagos, he enter bus.
He me his road. Oh yes,
he me his road.
Oh yes,
he me his road.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
he go cause confusion.
Oh yes,
driver go stop.
Oh yes,
bus go break.
Oh yes,
passenger go scatter.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
I say he me his road.
Oh yes,
if you miss your road, not come my way, I beg you. I beg you,
don't come my way.
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 I don't want your trouble.
Don't come my way.
Don't find my trouble.
Don't come my way.
If you miss your road, don't come my way. I beg you.
Don't come my way.
I don't want your trouble.
Don't come my way.
Don't find my trouble.
Don't come my way.
I beg you,
don't go 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 my way.
Thank you. We're back on ID West. Dan, baseball, the first truly popular spectator sport in America, it's been losing ground for something like 50 years now to professional football. I'm talking about the Unitas game here, right? The Unitas versus the New York Giants football game, the televised championship that began putting football over the hump as the most popular sport.
That did happen, and baseball did lose a lot of ground in the 1960s and 1970s to football. In recent years, I think it has either been holding steady or gaining ground.
That's precisely what I wanted to ask around, because it seems to me baseball was so mocked after the 1994 strike in particular, right? Where the Yankees were on this cusp of making it to the World Series. They were leading.
In 94, yes.
Up to 94. It seems to me baseball has recovered rather nicely. Is it prove to you that good marketing in particular helped baseball, you know, regain its standing? Maybe things like the home run competition between Sosa and McGuire in 1998, that sort of things. What played into baseball, you know, getting back on its feet?
The powers that be in baseball got smart about using the internet for one thing. And now, of course, every major league game is available on radio or TV. You can get it all through the internet, and that's one reason the sports revenues have grown so much. And of course, you can follow pitch by pitch the action of every game on the internet. I think they have gotten smarter about drug testing. Certainly the game probably is more fair, less tainted than it was in the 1990s. You see that.
And they come down hard on people who do cheat.
Yes.
A-Rod, classic case.
162 game suspension.
But how long did that take, though? I mean, you know, he'd been using for a while.
It took 15 years.
You're not convinced. Rohit is not convinced at all.
I mean, he's right. You know, I mean, it took a long, long time. I mean, we have seen McGuire, we have seen Sosa.
Barry Bonds. I mean, yeah, these guys play their entire careers before they get a slap on the wrist or whatever. I mean, you know, they're already gazillionaires by the time any of that happens.
Well, yeah, it took 15 or 20 years, but I think it has cleaned up in the last, I'd say, 7 years or so, and the evidence is the drop in home runs, the drop in overall hitting. It got to be a mockery, especially late 90s, early 2000s, where it seemed like every game the score was 15 to 12.
Like nonstop.
Yeah. You know, sports are affected a lot by changing demographic trends. For example, something that played a lot in football's favor in the 1960s, for instance, was, you know, population trends, people moving west, you know, football putting teams in western cities, that sort of things. With the Latino population growing in the United States, you get the sense that baseball is going to have to reach out to Latinos a lot, especially if the sport's popularity keeps on declining among African Americans.
I think baseball already does a pretty good job at reaching out to Latinos. In many cities, there are Spanish broadcasts.
Yes.
And I mean, you're probably aware the number of players from
Latin America.
Latin America is
absolutely.
Actually, I was just thinking about this today. There's a new influx. For years, the majority of Latin American players came from the Dominican Republic, and they still do. I've just noticed there's an influx of Cuban players coming in. I think just this year already, we've seen four new Cuban players enter the majors. Then there's a smattering, like I said, a player from Aruba, Puerto Rico, Panama. There's a smattering coming from other places. And I'm not sure baseball has to reach out to Latinos. I think the Latinos are already following baseball. I mean, not in Miami because the team is so bad, but elsewhere, I think.
Although that can change, you know. I mean, they've won two World Series titles, you know, the Marlins, who at the time used to be called the Florida Marlins, now the Miami Marlins. But I mean, things can change in the
Miguel Cabrera was there at that time.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the current Miami ownership is going to allow that to happen, because that's a case. That's a case of a bad owner just sort of like taking in all the revenues that baseball generates and not necessarily putting it back into the team.
See, when I hear you say that, and fair enough, I mean, who knows how long that's going to last, that, you know, pattern of bad management. But I remember the pattern in the first half of the 2000s in particular. The pattern seemed to be that the New York Yankees would win the AL East and they would make it to the World Series, and then they would lose in the World Series to a team that had won something like 14 games their three previous season combined. And in 2003, that team was, you know, the Florida Marlins.
Yes.
So for what it's worth. But anyway, something to follow. We got an exciting season of baseball ahead. Dan Joseph, thank you for being here with us on the show. Thanks, Arash. Pleasure as always. Rohit, Laura Wojcik, Wagner Roberts, and fiancé, whose name I don't know yet.
Ashley.
But you've been listening to the Voice of America's Independence West. I'm Robert D. We'll see you in 2 weeks.